You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 199. Today is, not Thursday, December 4th. That's when we're recording, Steve, but had to miss a day because I was under the weather. So I think our pod's coming out on Friday. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for keeping me in line here. I'm on the recovery bus. But we got a great show tonight. We are looking at early ADP is wrong and talking about some names, some numbers in the two early views of average draft position. And we've got about 10 names that we are selecting as ones that will climb between now and draft season for a variety of reasons. And Steve, we both got a handful here in the ADP ranges from as early as 18th pick overall to as late as 318. So fun swath of kind of early, middle, late round picks. Going to be a great show, man. It's starting to flip over to the new season for me. I'm just getting to like a lull on all of my, I know that which shall not be named of fantasy football. Other things are kind of waning off and I'm like beginning the prep mode, which is what we're doing here. It's a lot of fun. How's it going out there, man?
Yeah, it's good. Definitely getting into draft mode. Starting to get the itch.
I
find myself like opening up the NFC app, checking out ADP randomly, which kind of gave the inspiration for a bit of this show. Although I think we've done it a few times before. And starting to get the itch. Yeah. See some early draft boards and things like that. It's definitely exciting. The early drafts I did last year, I did not do well in, so I kind of don't have, that much desire to jump in, but I probably will sooner than later. Maybe especially after this show, but yeah, I always like this topic. Like Gray over at Razzball, one of the guys that I always read and always mention on the show, like whenever he does his sleepers or rookie picks, like he always talks about how, there's 10 drafts in November that set an ADP on a guy and they stay within this range and it may not necessarily be right in March. So, that is sort of the seed for this topic here. Guys that we think will rise. I don't want to put guys that fall because that's like, a guy gets injured or like, something happens or
sure.
I don't know. Usually it's, I don't think it's necessary really to focus on the downside or the other end of this. So glad we focused on just the risers. I mean, I know we do our chalkboard and have fades and all that and everything, but for the purpose of this exercise, I think just focusing on, hey, this is where the market's pricing guys in November, December. And maybe that's going to have too much of an influence come February and March when it's full-time draft season. Maybe we could pick out a few guys here that should end up higher than they are because of this bias that's built in right as the season ends.
Well, and an interesting nuance is this is a list of players that we believe will rise, whether or not we ourselves are heavily targeting them.
Sure.
I mean, we kind of convince ourselves.
Guys I put, I think I'll be heavily targeting.
Most of them are, but yeah. I got one or two where it's
like it.
They could move up whether or not they should move up, but yeah, we got rationale for each. Without further ado, cause we got a ton of names. Steve will kind of, we won't bounce back and forth as much as we've done in past shows because whoever put the name leads it off. So why don't you start us off here in the second round with a perennial first rounder who has slipped a little bit.
Yeah. My first guy here is Kyle Tucker. And sort of what else I wanted to note on that little intro here is early ADP is heavily skewed by last year's results. ADP for the following year is skewed on the previous year's result almost too heavily. I think it's something that, you know, is very important, but I think we get distorted, especially for guys, veteran players that have a long track record like Kyle Tucker has. You know, a down year can play too much in price. Like, you know, you saw that with like Lindor, his first year after the Mets, right?
Yep.
He slipped to like the fourth or fifth round. It's been a perennial first to early second rounder since, right? Tucker, I think, is even more of a victim of this because he's had 2 years in a row where he's been injury plagued, right? The 2023 season, that was more so on the game side, right? He only played 78 games. Their results were elite. It was just a shame that he only played 78 games because of that, what, that was like shin fracture, right, that they didn't know was fractured. Well, guess what? You know, 2025, how could that happen again? You know, they misdiagnosed a fracture. Well, in 2025, they misdiagnosed a fracture. He fractured his his hand in June. The initial x-rays were negative. He played through it, you know, in August it came out that, yeah, oh, by the way, he was playing through a fractured hand. Yeah, thanks. so I crazy. Think that, you know, it's easy to see two disappointing years, one on a counting stat basis in 2024, one on a counting stat and rate basis, or more so on a rate basis mm-hmm. in 2025, right? You see the 22 homers, 25 steals were nice, but you know, a 266 average and only 136 games. And it's hard not to be disappointed, especially after the start that he got off to. But that start before he fractured his hand sliding into a base on June 1st, in April and May, Kyle Tucker slashed 288, 397, 530, good for a 927 OPS and a 154 WRC plus with 12 homers and 16 stolen bases. That was, you know, on pace for a career year. After June 1st, from that fractured hand that was misdiagnosed, 253, 366, 419, a 785 OPS, 125 WRC plus, 10 homers and 9 stolen bases. He had more homers in about 80 less stolen bases in May, in April and May. Two more homers in April and May in 80 less plate appearances than he did the rest of the season. He had 7 more stolen bases in 80 less plate appearances in April and than he did in April and May, right? You know, the numbers speak for himself before he got healthy. If Kyle Tucker is healthy, he's going to be a superstar and a first-round talent. He's not being drafted as such. It's also kind of cheating. He doesn't have a team yet, but I think that plays into it because a lot of these landing spots that he's rumored for are awesome.
For lefties as
Yankees, lefty haven. Having, you know, the Mets, I know it's not a great ballpark, but he'd probably be hitting between Soto and Lindor.
Yeah.
So there's that. I mean, there's also the Dodgers rumors, which is just absurd, right? And, you know, Wrigley Field isn't really a hitter friendly in April and May when he did most of his damage, right?
True.
When it's cold there and it's the wind isn't blowing out. It's more pitcher friendly early in the season. So, maybe that played against him a little bit too, despite those amazing numbers. So yeah, I'm all in on Kyle Tucker. I think it's just he's being dinged too much because of two injuries that happened simultaneously, and I think he should be able to stay healthy. It's not like he didn't have solid game totals the three previous years. To the last
yeah, this is such a good one. I mean, imagine with current ADPs, if you had like an Elly De La Cruz, Kyle Tucker build or something. It's just unreal. We were talking about him after those first 2 months, Steve, kind of crowning him as, you know, he's finally going to do
top,
it.
Like five player. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the hot take was 1-1 even.
Yeah.
Just the way the Cubs offense was humming. And, yeah, it seemed like everything, the pull homers, we haven't even talked about the almost full month he missed with the left calf issue, but, you know, but for that, he would have easily set a high watermark on steals. He's just 28 years old. We've talked about him for 2 or 3 years as being capable of 1-1, not just, you know, for a while there, it got boring, right? It was like the metronome 30-30 thing, but now it's 2 years in a row that have ended disappointing, but at certain
the
points during those
that,
years.
Yeah.
Exactly. You were thinking like this could be the year where it all clicks. Maybe the only flip side is because I'm with you, the rumored spots. Well, for the purpose of the show, again, they will, definitely push his ADP up.
Whenever a guy doesn't have a team, the ADP is always a little bit suppressed. That's why this is kind of cheating. I'm not going to say that, oh, you know, I told you he was being drafted too. Like, it's going to go up. I think, you know, had he had the contract with the Cubs and this been that year, coming off two injuries, I still would have pushed to raise his ADP, you know, just based on the skills that he showed in those limited samples. And he still has that talent. It's not like we're betting on some, you know, it's not like, you know, not to make a comparison, but like James Wood, who has some impressive skills, but also flaws and limited track record and, you know, splits in the second half that was a bit concerning, right? That you say, oh, you know, yeah, maybe this could happen. Like, Tucker has done it. There isn't a question of what his floor is. There is still maybe a question of what his best season could be in terms of potentially approaching like 40 homers and 30 steals, like Juan Soto type of year from last year is potentially something he can hit. He can come close to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he probably would have been, you know, even just from a steal standpoint, granted with leaving the Cubs, maybe the steals do
and contract year too. Maybe he was put before he broke his hand, right? Sliding into a base, like maybe he was given a bit more, trying to pump that value up that we've seen in
contract. But the good news is, it might be kind of oversimplifying, but he might be press proof because he came into a big market, brand new team, and he started off red hot. So hopefully he doesn't kind of go the way of Lindor and so many others, you know, Soto, and where it takes him a while to get
career total, going. 119 stolen bases, only 16 caught stealing. Like he is just an amazing base runner as far as the steals go.
Yeah.
Even though he doesn't have the sprint speed to back it up, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's a great one. You got another bounce back candidate here, dropping down to ADP 71. So kind of in that sixth round territory. But talk to me about this next hitter bounce back that you're liking.
Yeah, I think this is just a case of, you know, the hate going a bit too far. Maybe coupled with the fact that he was potentially overdrafted last year. And that was second rounder Jackson Merrill, right? He was firmly entrenched there as an early pick that maybe not everybody was in on. I didn't find too many problems with it after his 24 homer, 16 steal, you know, season where he struck out just 17% of the time. I think this is also a case of the fact that he was riddled by injury as well in 2025. He had a hamstring injury in April, a concussion from a hit by pitch in the face in June that he went on the IL for, and I think he came back relatively quickly from, but still, you know, getting hit in the face, I could see that easily derailing a season. Mm-hmm. An ankle injury in August. The hamstring and ankle tell me that, you know, that's the reason for the lack of steals. I think that's the biggest concern. He only attempted 3 stolen bases last year, was successful once and caught twice. The sprint speed was still there. It was the exact same year over year. So, you know, you wonder.
Where were the steals early on is a question.
Exactly. But. Yeah. Like, did he just not have the jump because of the hamstring, right? You know, maybe he could have reached his top speed when he got going, but wasn't able to get that jump that allowed him to steal bases. That's something that, you know, potentially could lead to an issue. Yeah. The quality contact was relatively in line, right? The barrel rate even improved year over year to 13% from 11.3%. The hard hit was a 1 percentage point difference. Max EV, 1 mile an hour difference. Hard hit rate did drop a bit. But you know, the launch angle and pull percentage relatively in line. What did tick off was his plate skills, which were elite the year before. Mm-hmm. But he chased more, made less contact. Like, you know, that was sort of his bread and butter coming up and what he did so well his rookie year. I would bet on that bouncing back, just a little bit.
Yeah, all through the minors, yeah, he was like in the low teens strikeout rate, and last year the 22. Like that seems like an outlier.
It was more surprising that he had the 24 home runs the year before, right, in 2024. Mm-hmm. So, and that still was relatively at the same pace, right? 16 homers and 440 plate appearances. So you know, maybe it would have been lower 20s. But still, like, you know, the power overall was still there. The underlying metrics are still there for the power. So I would bet on the bounce back for Merrill and could see him being a five-category contributor given his health. And I think it's just, you know, you spent the second-round pick on him. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, I'm not doing that again. He's now, a sixth-rounder. I think he's going to settle into more of a fourth-rounder, and that's where his value sort of should be, with maybe a chance for more, right? He's only 22 years old.
Yeah, yeah. What's interesting is in the past month or so, his ADP has actually gone the other direction. Like, average ADP has gone the other direction, where he was, like, in the mid-60s, and lately it's, like, rounding out again at, like, 71. So, yeah, I mean, but I'm with you, Steve. I mean, the steals category is the question mark, like we talked about. But when you're talking about an April hamstring, like, it's pretty easy to point to that. So, yeah, I think when you look at his minor league numbers to, like, validate, because it is small sample size in the majors, like, that's the player that he was kind of showing up as, is maybe not like a 30 steal guy, but a contributor on the base paths. And then, like you said, the power has kind of been like a pleasant surprise, and the hit tool is supposed to be best of all. I think he got maybe, I guess, what do we make of that, you know, in 2024, he was kind of showing up as a 300 guy pretty much in terms of expected stats. He hit 292. Last year it was 264. Are you just kind of chalking that up to a weird year in terms of the concussion, the hamstring, all that stuff?
I think that'll bounce back when his plate skills and plate discipline bounce back in line, you know. Yeah. It's a matter of, you know, having an elite strikeout rate at 17% to just average at 24%, 22% this year, you know. He chased a lot more where he did not chase really much at all in 2024. You know, and for a guy like him, like, yeah, he's going to provide and be an enticing second round pick when he has 15 steals to go along with the elite batting average and a good homer total, right? You know, it kind of reminds me almost, maybe it's not a perfect comp, but like, it's like Pete Crow Armstrong's first half and second half almost sort of split into 2 years between 2024 and 2025. Mm-hmm. For Merrill. And if you kind of marry the two, you may see something similar to like his overall, you know, 20 homer, 15 steal, 280. Like that's a good player. Like a Michael Harris type of thing when he was, you know, going in this range, like, and maybe more sustainable because the plate discipline is a lot better for Merrill.
Yeah, it is.
Harris and PCA, right?
Yeah.
I think he's
got
to get back to that.
Steamer has him projected at 22 homers, 7 steals, a 269 average, but that's in 133 games. So if you give him 150, you know, that's 25-10, 270 hitter, which is great at that ADP. But I think what we're saying is I'll take the over on 10 steals and I'll take the over on 270 as a batting average.
Yeah.
But I think that you'd love to see something in the spring training reports that, like, he's running or, you know what I mean? He's feeling better than ever. And because I think the steals are kind of a big question mark for him of if it's 3 steals, that's going to be a much different fantasy player than the 15. But either way, I'm in here. Some of the names, let's just look, outfielders going around him. You got Riley Green after him, a few picks, Jaron Duran. And then before him, it looks like there's a little bit of a tier drop because you have Brent Rooker 13 picks sooner at pick 70 or 57. So yeah, I mean, it'll be,
yeah.
How low does he go?
There's a lot of names that, I don't know, like
Roman Anthony's 54th.
Anthony, I mean, I know he looked really good in the limited sample, but
he did, but he's played so little. Yeah, I mean, like, I just feel like,
is there,
I feel like,
for him that hit sort of like it did for Merrill a little bit too, you know. Uh-huh. Merrill looks, we were saying the same things about Merrill the year before, right?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Roman Anthony is getting the treatment, he's a beneficiary of like James Wood and Langford being that, yeah, like experimental, yeah, I'll drop a 50th pick on, mm-hmm, pedigree. But yeah, I think Merrill could easily move up 10, 15 spots by the time we're in March. And I'm interested. Yeah, I like it. Let's take a quick ad break and then we'll flip over. I've got a pitcher we're going to talk about to start with the pitching stuff, but we're going to take ad break one. We'll be right back after this. All right. So Steve, moving to the other side of the ball, we're talking about a WAF special name here, but you got to go a few years back. It's Dylan Cease, who I think you've brought up on this podcast every time he's been on the rundown, but I'm bringing him up this time, obviously. In the headlines, moving to the Toronto Blue Jays, which is a good landing spot for him. When you look at team context in terms of winning, but definitely with the defense behind him. Mm-hmm. And last year, it was a weird year for Cease because he's now had this back and forth. If you go back like 4 or 5 years where he looks elite 1 year and he moves all the way up to ADP 30, and then the ERA gets super inflated. He had a 4.58 ERA in 2023. And then 2024 was a great year with a 3.47 ERA, 107 whip. And then, you know, this past year, it boomerangs back to a 4.55 ERA, a 1.33 whip. But what's interesting about 2025 is that so much of the skills were actually great, and he got pretty unlucky. It's worth noting that you sign up for strikeouts with Cease, and I heard Chris Towers drop a line that was, and I'll probably get it wrong, but I think he's the only pitcher to have 210 or more strikeouts in 5 straight seasons. So like when you talk about bankable Ks, Dylan Cease has you covered there, but it's everything else that was, like the ERA indicators last year were all in like the mid threes. So a full run below. And then kind of digging under the hood even more, some of the stuff like his fastball velocity went up, his whiff rate on the fastball went up, overall across his entire arsenal, his swinging strike rate went up. He's still 29 years old. And again, that much better context in Toronto. It seems like for the purpose of this exercise, this will, you know, be in the green, because even in the past month, his ADP has gotten lower and lower. So I think Cease is one that will definitely be a riser, just because I kind of feel like these days, Steve, all of the stats, Statcast, the stuff we do on Pitcher List, Savant, people care less and less about the back of the baseball card. And I think the one thing hampering Cease is the back of the baseball card last year. So I could really see him moving up into like mid late 50s, which would be like a 25 pick jump from where he's at least at the moment.
That's such a good point. And like, the teams clearly don't care about the back of the baseball card,
right?
Like Devin Williams signed in an instant for however many millions of dollars a year, right? He'll probably be the highest paid reliever, other than maybe Diaz. Cease signed so quickly for a great amount of money. Like these teams, and then you have like this loud minority on Twitter that, you know, your analytics are ruining baseball, blah, blah, blah. Like, well, I mean, you're clearly disagreeing. The teams don't agree with you. So what are you saying? You know, it's just so funny. Like you see, like in my neck of the woods, you see like, you know, angry Yankee fans, like, you know, wishing Devin Williams good riddance and all that, not to make this conversation about Cease about Devin Williams, but the same thing applies.
Yeah.
Like, dude, they had unlucky years as far as, in Cease's case, home run per nine and BABIP. Williams had a ridiculously high, low left on base percentage. Like, that's just, yeah, and he's a reliever. Like, reliever ERA is the least reliable thing year over year because it's such a small sample and, you know, two or three outings just ruin it. Like, teams don't care. They care about the stuff that we're talking about and, mm-hmm. And looking at, and there's a reason that, you know, Cease has an elite strikeout rate, you know, posts every year like you're talking about, which is extremely rare these days, and
pretty decent bet to go like 170. I mean, if you look at his past 5 years, he's like averaging 175 innings. Like, that's not to be looked past either these days.
And like, he walks guys and gives up too many homers. There's going to be some volatility there, but with a better team, a better defense, and the ability to strike out everybody, there's seasons that, you know, he could put up a 270 ERA and 184 innings with 30% strikeout rate. That is not out of the question. That happened recently and probably will happen again in one of these few years, in the first few years of this contract. So, yeah, I love it. And definitely think he's going to rise up that ADP
board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pitchers going just ahead of him are like Spencer Schwellenbach, is like 3 picks ahead of him. And then you got to go up a little ways, but some other names are like George Kirby, Joe Ryan. I mean, there's definitely the tiers of the SP pool this year, right? And it's, you know, some of those guys just offer different things. But I think if you're in need of strikeouts, which tends to be the shiny toy in draft rooms, I think Cease is one that the arrow will be pointing up, especially kind of as this the team change kind of gets more drafts under the belt. But talk to me about another pitcher, Steve. This is one that when I saw the name, I was like, yep, we already felt it in the WAF early, or the Pitcherless podcast early mock. But let's talk about another pitcher at ADP 128.
Yeah, Cam Schlittler of the New York Yankees, the aforementioned New York Yankees. The hype train's already started. Like, you know, his postseason performance, that outing versus the Red Sox, and like trolling Red Sox fans. He's, you know, from Boston, and like, you know, playing the villain, just, you know, to be in the news more often and in the New York media cycle. The Yankees are hyping up, rightfully so, right? Like, the numbers are super impressive. To have a 28% strikeout rate and his first 73 major league innings, just blow the fastball by everybody, look unhittable. Like, some of the best stuff that we saw in the second half there. You know, you saw those elite strikeout total games where you do your back of the baseball game log scouting. I mean, you saw it in the playoffs too, in that start versus the Red Sox. And there's already news that he's working to add a changeup or a splitter with Matt Blake. And if that happens, which, you know, the Yankees have a really good pitching lab, like, and they get the most out of these guys. And they really believe in him. Like, they're hyping up their pitching staff, and rightfully so, right? Because once Garrett Cole comes back and Rodon comes back in May, like, you got a pretty good four there with Fried, Cole, Rodon, and Schlittler. That I would put up with pretty much any team. So a lot riding on it. There's a hype train already. Like, the minimum pick on him has been 90. Like, there's no way this guy's ADP is going to have, three digits before the decimal point come March. So get your Cam Schlittler shares for cheap while you can now in December.
Yeah, it's no doubt that he will be going up. Like, I noted that, because what's that his ADP right now is 128. In our podcast draft, he went 110. I agree with all the points you're making, Steve. I got to say, for my own book, I'm starting to look at like that range and that tier, and I'm just wondering, like, am I fully sold? Like, obviously the 98 mile per hour velocity is great, but in terms of like having I guess that's really the mega floor, like that, the swing strike rate on that, you know, compared to other fastballs around the league has to be like 90th percentile. Mm-hmm. So that goes back to what, you know, Nick and Eno have always said, that if you've got the foundation of a stellar fastball. But it doesn't.
Yeah, it's like the first thing you choose when you're drafting, when you're built, like when they do those, you know, draft a pitcher trait, you know, shows
for sure. Like that. Yeah. My pushback a little bit is that the fastball doesn't get a ton of movement. He doesn't have a ton of extension, but he gets away with it because he's throwing at 98 miles per hour. And then he doesn't have a secondary pitch that has like elite swing and miss stuff. And when I see like the ERA indicators were closer to 4 than the 2.96 that he had, he has the, you know, the walk rate that elevates the whip at like 1.22. So I like the pitcher, but depending on how much kind of the hype train keeps going, you look at like who is ahead of him, Nolan McClain, Tyler Glasnow, Brandon Woodruff, I would take him over Gausman, Mizorowski. Like, what do you think? Can he leap like Gausman, Mizorowski? Where do you kind of draw the line on how high you move him up? Because I think there are still concerns about just how much we've seen.
Sure. I think he may jump most of those guys. And yeah, sure, you know, nothing stands out maybe movement wise or extension wise, but like if you look at that movement profile on Savant, like where his arm slot is and where like the expected movement is for his fastball, it's all like up and to the left as far as like the movement profile of where it is. So for where his slot is, the fastball is not going, and it gives it that, you know, unexpected rise or movement from his release point. Considering, you know, where he releases the ball and the arm angle that he's at, it just has more IVB and a different movement than hitters expect. And it plays that optical illusion game, you know, that you can do in different ways. Right. So, nothing jumps off the page extension. I mean, extension wise or movement wise, as far as the compared to average. Right. But based on his slot and where he's releasing the ball, you know, it moves unexpectedly. And on top of that, you know, it has that 99 mile an hour velocity. So,
I mean,
you know, there's other, you know, he has a cutter that he throws, curveball, you know, if there's another pitch to complement that four seamer and a changeup, like, you know, there could be a really big breakout coming in. And I think the market may price that in sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And talk about like results that are worth noting is like, you know, I can sit there and poke at movement profiles of the fastball across 700 pitches. It had a 178 batting average against. So it's like, it is clearly giving hitters doing something fits, right? Yeah. That's Schlittler. Next one that in the ADP is at 149. We've talked about him on a couple shows. Everyone has, but Trey Savage, we can just cover quickly, but this is one that it just seems like this type, Steve, always kind of climbs and rises. At 149, his projections kind of cover the one question I would have of like the volume, where he's at 150 innings projected, and obviously with the huge postseason he had. I want to pull up. So it seems like after it's a slight curve, like right after the playoffs, his average pick was around like 140. And so now it is slowly dropping down to like the 150 territory. So maybe that's cooling off a little bit. Do you think Savage is going to go be a riser throughout? Like the names in front of him are like Gavin Williams, Zach Wheeler, Sonny Gray. Are you with me on this, or do you think he'll kind of stabilize here because we've learned our lessons?
I think I don't know if there will be as much hype as like a Schlittler, but you know, and also like the Blue Jays are, he's definitely guaranteed like a rotation spot, right? Like,
yeah,
they signed Cody Ponce, who looks interesting, right? You know, he's currently, that's the fifth slot. Savage is in the fourth. Like I don't know if the Blue Jays will be on EMA. I'm sure they will. Like, it just seems like the Blue Jays are super aggressive. All I'm saying is, you know, they already signed Cease. Like, Ponce, mm-hmm. like two of the biggest starting pitcher signings so far have already been made by them. So, you know, that also could mean that they just did their moves early and mm-hmm. could be done. But, yeah, I could definitely see it. And, you know, it just Slater had those 78, like, basically elite innings. Savage was really just a 14. And then the playoffs, which are really good, but not as much to rely on. And, you know, I know the minor league numbers were unbelievable, too, at a 41% strikeout rate in 98 innings. So, yeah, I guess I'm trying to throw cold water on it, even though I really
it's
can't.
Hard, dude, because he's got, I mean, the ground dude, ball rate about, is up there, talk the swing about and miss stuff.
Talk about yeah. a different release point, right, that oh, makes yeah. him so fun like to watch. O'clock. Just good. So I could see it, like, there's a lot of pitchers that are exciting and probably will just go up. Like I think that's also just the like these pitchers and like relievers will also just naturally go up as long as they stay healthy throughout all of draft season, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think with Schlittler, you have the foundation of the fastball is probably one of the biggest differences.
Yeah,
Savage sits at like 94.7. And then on the flip side, he's got the split finger, which is the wipeout pitch yeah. that Schlittler doesn't necessarily have in terms of secondaries. And the ground ball rate is higher. I think we talked about the Jays with the defense. And I just think that this is one that I was kind of hinting at the start of the show where, like, I think he will move up. And I'm okay. not sure I'm the one saying, like, oh, I'll take him at 125 if it goes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just seems like any kind of young up and coming pitcher who's at 150 never stays at 150. Like yeah. You creep up and you creep up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that said, when you look 20 picks, or is it 20, but like Sonny Gray that's ahead now with the Red Sox
back in the NL East.
You know, yeah. he's as much as his ratios are a little bit higher. He's like, you're probably going to get close to 200 Ks. Could you say that for your Savage after only seeing 40 yeah, innings? Yeah. Like it's a tough thing to yeah, project yeah. out. So yeah, yeah that's another one. Okay. Shifting to a wily veteran who I hope the industry bumps him up, but I think they will because it's just such a story that like these easy narratives are ones that I think always kind of catch on and people, it takes like one Nick Pollock to say this guy is being slept on and yeah. it could jump 30 spots. But Sandy Alcantara, who
one WAF episode, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. But I thought of Nick because Nick was in
yeah, you're right.
at the start of last year where he was saying he thought they would still get the volume. I think we all expected Sandy to move environments mm-hmm. last year and he didn't. It's kind of the same story where like, surely he gets moved from Miami at some point here at age 30. But for Sandy, and this is a near and dear story to my heart because I picked him up, right around like August 1st and he almost gave me the push I needed in the home league. But yeah, when you look at like pre-All-Star, I mean, his splits pre-All-Star, yeah. 7.22 ERA, a 1.48 whip, post-All-Star, a 3.33 ERA, a 1.04 whip. And he was back to the volume and everything that we kind of count on Sandy for. On top of that, I think an encouraging thing is that we were waiting for it all season. Like he had the same velocity that he had always had. He was still getting ground, like high ground ball rates. It was just a matter of like, I guess sequencing and location.
Feel,
because
yeah.
yeah, eventually it clicked. And when it did, we saw, you know, the basically mid threes ERA and a one flat whip. So yeah, I think Sandy just still at age 30, when you look at this ADP of 160, I would love to have him as like an SP4 for my yeah. team. And I just feel like with those first half, second half splits and year two of Tommy John, which I know is something you always like, Steve, as long as people just don't think he's too boring with some of the names like you Savage around him. I think he's got every chance to kind of move up 15, 20 picks and scoot up. But what are your thoughts on Sandy?
Yeah, I think this is a great call and a guy that I'm going to want a lot of shares of. I mean, second half was classic Sandy, and like we were so in on him because all of the velocity readings looked great in spring. Like he looked fully healthy. It was a little bit longer time. Like, right, he didn't come back at all in 2024. So like it was like, okay, he took a little bit extra time, but looks fully healthy now. So maybe there won't be that, you know, delay, or you know, it'll still be good the first year when he comes back from TJ rather than the second. But that didn't turn out to be the case, not necessarily because of the stuff. It was more feel and location, and it makes sense looking back on it, right? Like that's how Sandy was elite, right? Even though he did throw 99, it was because he threw 99 and put it wherever he wanted within the zone. Yeah. And that may not be as that, or that's definitely not as easy to see, you know, missing your spot by a little bit more than you're normally used to for a guy that's like a command artist. Even though he is throwing 99, is going to make a big difference. And he just got that back over time, and it was clear that he was himself in the second half. And it was, you know, almost as many innings, right? It was 83 innings in the second half compared to the 91. So, yeah, the numbers are overall are inflated because the 91 innings had a 7.22 ERA, but yeah, there's a lot to like in that second half. It's super encouraging. I would definitely put more stock in that, and am a buyer of Sandy Alcantara at the current prices he at ADP 160.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like his, it just all looked better. Like the May, July, his swing and miss across all his pitches were at like 17%, up to August and September, up to like 25%, 20%. So he's still not like going to strike out the yard. He never really, that's never been his style, but he's kind of that, what we talk about with a Logan Webb, right? But to a lesser extent, that like the volume is going to give you.
I mean,
totals.
He still gave you the volume, like he gave you 174 innings. Like, it wasn't. It wasn't great because a lot of the you know, 91 of those things were very bad. But he gave
turned
you
into
like,
set it and forget.
He gave you the volume coming back from injury. Like, so there's no reason to expect. I think he's kind of as close to a lock for 200 innings as basically anybody. Is, you know, especially year two after Tommy John. So you should, you know, you should have a few more years in there before, you know, knock on wood, anything would happen like that. So,
I mean, the only thing, again, if this were 10 years ago, you'd be able to get Sandy at pick like 220 because he had a 536 ERA. Yeah, you know, it's just everybody's sharpened to where now it's like even the 159 is the starting point. But I think it's worth moving him up. And in terms of his trend, it's kind of up and down. He's got a pretty wide.
What's his min pick?
Min pick is 97, it looks like. But then his max pick is like 224.
Wow.
So there's believers and non-believers depending on the room. But yeah, so Sandy, now this is one that maybe he will, maybe he won't move up, but I think this is one that I'm in on. So yeah, that's Alcantara. We'll get back on the hitter side of things, but we're going to take our second ad break and we'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, another one I wanted to bring up that I think is kind of the mold where these guys tend to rise, but Jack Caglione, who we were all so excited for the call-up last year, and it couldn't have gone worse. It felt reminiscent of, I don't know, the Jared Kelnicks or pick a guy where we get so hyped and then they flop early on, but you have to remind yourself it's just 62 games. Caglione was awful. He had a 157 average, 532 OPS. But on the positive side, he only struck out 22% of the time, which isn't good, but it's not like, you know, some of the stuff we've seen from, I don't know, your Joe Adele early moments where it's like, oh, 34% strikeout or something like that. He had a 172 BABIP and a 12% barrel rate. Pretty good, like hard hit rates and everything. And yet that 160 batting average or whatever it was just doesn't add up. So I'm willing to not only give him the pass, but also bet that the industry will find an excuse to give him a free pass for those 60 games. because in the 66 games in the minors before that, he had a 280 ISO and looked like he was about to become a superstar with 40 bombs and an 80 grade name. And we were all just ready to kind of get behind another exciting young Royal. So this is one that I think at ADP 224 has to move down. I noted here, but hilarious range that his min pick is 99. And there's a handful of drafts where he's gone in the 150s. So he has his believers. And I think, you know, it might just take a couple positive offseason reports or something in spring where people start moving him up the board big time. But thought on Cags here. Are you interested, and do you believe that he'll move up from 224?
People were probably higher on Jack Caglione than they were Nick Kurtz, right? Heading into last year?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe just because people probably thought Kurtz was maybe a little bit further away. Like, you know, they were viewed as similar level prospects. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not changed now and that Caglione is capable of the amazing season that Nick Kurtz had. I don't think so, at least not yet. But there's still reason. My point is that there's still reason to be excited about Caglione. He showed some impressive skills down in the minors in 2025. And, you know, was at a similar, right, it was the same draft, right? It was 2024 draft. And
yeah.
Went right from high A to triple A by the middle of last season and held his own. And I think that's important. You know, he did only strike out 22% of the time. That doesn't tell me that he's completely overwhelmed and overmatched. It's like, whoa, he's totally not ready for this with like a 40% strikeout rate, like you were saying. So there definitely is some room for some encouraging signs. Like, you know, the hard hit rate was pretty good. The barrel rate was good and, you know, didn't look totally overmatched despite, you know, as how competitive a 532 OPS could seem.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. The other note with Caglione is there was a hamstring strain in July as well. So that was kind of sandwiched in between some lackluster production. So yeah, I think it's just worth, I'll be in at this price. I mean, I do think that right after 200 is always a time where we're like shopping pitchers, seems like every year, but he's one that I think will be an exciting lottery ticket if he stays in that range. But I think he will move up with the hype. So that's Caglione. Steve talked to me about another hitter who did the breakout, and it's not getting the attention it deserves.
Yeah, Mickey Moniak is definitely a name that I was surprised to see, looking at his numbers, how good they were, and maybe that's sort of reflected in the ADP there. But 24 homers in what was it? 461 plate appearances, 434 at bats, and did so well, reducing his strikeout rate by 3%, down to a much more palatable 24% from 27%. You know, yeah, there's still some concerns with lefties. There's still some concerns with home road splits. But Mickey Moniak looked like he kind of had a breakout in Coors, and you could find players that a lot of flaws get covered up by Coors Field. And, you know, if the Rockies with the new GM sort of give him the ball and he does start hitting like he did in the second half and earning some plate appearances against lefties, like that could easily turn into a full-time role on that batted team. And, you know, you could maybe have a 34 homer season rather than a 24 homer season, even if his plate appearances are limited versus lefties and he has to deal with Coors on the road. So, or, you know, being away from Coors when he goes on the road. So, interesting player at ADP 240. I think that there could be some potential rises in there, if, especially if, you know, he's announced as the Rockies three hitter and mashes in spring training and anything like that. I mean, he also could be like trade fodder. I don't know. But it looks like the Rockies may have found something there. At least they played the way they played him in the second half, and the 17 homers he hit in the second half are a bit encouraging. Right. He improved his hard hit rate by 10%, improved his barrel rate by 5% or 4%. All while cutting the strikeout rate. A lot of the things that you wanted to see happen with Mickey Moniak when he was a first overall pick by the Phillies back in whatever, 2017 or 2018. Mm-hmm. 2016. Wow. Oh, man. Whoa. I don't remember that. That was, it was yesterday. But yeah, a lot of good things happen for Mickey Moniak, even if he may not be an everyday player. I think he definitely can be fantasy relevant considering the gains that he made under the hood and as far as on the baseball card as well.
Yeah, I mean, the hit tool and passable speed have always been kind of the scouting report. And a couple years back, he hit 280 in 85 games. Like you said, like the splits aren't great to look at. But the problem is you're always looking for the pop to help turn a corner. And when you add Coors to the mix, it's interesting. And you're right, Steve, you kind of look twice when you're like, wait, 24 homers, yeah, 9 steals, 270 and going this way.
He strike out like 38% of the time, just get lucky. It's like, oh no.
No, 24%. He used to. Yeah, like there was definitely years where he was in the mid 30s. Yeah. Holy smokes, at just 21 games, but a 43% strikeout rate in 2021 with the Phillies. Yeah, we've talked about him on WAF in past years, but it's definitely like quiet post way post type sleeper, and he got some looks against lefties, but it wasn't great. And then you mentioned the home road splits. How bad were those? Yeah, bad. But you kind of sign up for that with Coors, or you know, it kind of an interesting,
comes to be expected.
Yeah, it's an interesting late like best ball type of name too.
Outfield 4, outfield 5, like you probably could do worse.
Yeah, I like the, he's a good cheat code for like a lineup optimization leagues though, because you just catch him on the hot ones. So Moniak there at 240, about 10 picks later at 249 is Ryne Nelson, who stop me if you've heard this before, because I feel like I've brought
you
him
are
up.
You are officially the Ryne Nelson guy.
I am Steve, and that's you know, no surprise. He's got the extension going with nearly seven feet of extension, but he put in a really solid year last year with the 3.39 ERA, a 1.07 WHIP. And for the D-backs, when they were cruising, he was kind of at the helm. He's another one that it's kind of Alcantara-esque in a way, that he has like a fastball that he relies on, but he doesn't get a ton of Ks. But he'll help you with whip. He kind of answered the call that they needed last year when their rotation was falling apart. I thought it was just an interesting thing. Like on Sports Illustrated, I saw that his record was 7-3, but he left the game with 7 leads that the bullpen blew. So like in another universe, he was in a spot to get 14 wins. I'm sure you could game that out with a lot of pitchers, but I think Nelson is just, you know, he's still 27 years old and he's always had like, we're waiting for one swing and miss pitch to really turn him into an elite pitcher. But without it, he's still really serviceable with that fastball foundation. And I think when you're asking for the secondaries to come along, that's a positive story when you look at last year, because he increased velocity on both the cutter on the slider. The swing and miss rates went up on the cutter and also on the slider. So they're still not like above league average, but Nelson is making the steps we want him to make. He's at right now looks like he's locked into that rotation, And yeah, he goes to four pitches. Like, he just seems like a really solid, like, rotation roundout piece that has a chance to do more. I'm kind of curious what his volume projections are at, because he's always kind of been that bullpen project. But they got him at
169,
man. And then the ERA they've got at 4.39. Like, I would just ask why, when last year his xERA was 3.89. He's a good ground ball pitcher. It's a good team behind him. Like, I like Nelson, but this one might be more me liking him. I don't know if he's kind of old news now. I know a couple of years back he was kind of an industry darling and people were waiting for a breakout, but you think he could scoot up the boards, or you think he'll stay put here?
I don't know, but I'm on the same page. Like, there's been steady improvement, like minor improvement year over year. He's only 27 years old. He'll be 28 this year. He turns 28 in February. So, you know, he's made small improvement, you know, like the 15% K rate was just, you know, basically unacceptable in 2023. Improved that up to 20% in 2024. It ticked up to 21%. Like, you know, I don't think he'll ever be like a high 25% strikeout guy, but if he's, you know, keeps the walk rate in line where it is and good and throws 160 innings and ticks up a tick or two on the strikeout rate, which, you know, he has that foundation in that fastball and extension. If there's another thing that's slightly added, which he's gotten better at and has had better stretches here. You know, there was basically, you know, I just remember over all those years, right? There were stretches where you wanted Ryan Nelson on your team and he was hot and you were running with him for a bit. And those stretches seem to get longer and longer over the last few years. And mm-hmm. maybe this is the year that he finally puts it all together. So, you know, I'm interested. I don't, you know, I maybe if it's announced that he's got a full-time spot, added a pitch, things like that, the hype crane could take off on him. But there's a lot to like with Ryan Nelson. I know I said it in jest that you're the Ryan Nelson guy, but there's good reason.
Yeah, and like, I know it's not the game log that you see with like a Mackenzie Gore or something, but his last start of the season struck out 9 Dodgers. And then what's hurting him is that he mixes in these like 1 strikeout games or 3 strikeout games, but he's shown like, you know, 7 strikeout game, 8 strikeout, 8 strikeout game, a few 7s.
Missing some consistency. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's somewhere in there where he can have some swing and miss days. But, I think the upside is that he improves the secondary pitch and then it kind of looks more like a Jordan Montgomery in his heyday or something. But, I do like, Nelson. Steve, why don't you, round out with, our last one here. Deepest one yet at 3.18.
I threw this one on there for you too. JJ Weatherholt, is a guy that, I'm pretty interested in. I think there's no reason why he shouldn't make the Cardinals coming out of spring. And he looks as good a prospect as any. Gray over at Razzball has him ranked as his first rookie that he does every year. And he has a high success rate on those. You know, it's sometimes easier year in other years than some to say, okay, you know, the year that Bryce Harper's coming up, Trout's coming up, whatever. It's pretty obvious. Some years it's not as obvious. With Weatherholt, I think it might be kind of obvious, at least who's the most major league ready, right? Like this guy at 22 years old, walked just as much as he struck out while hitting 17 homers, stealing 23 bases across 2 levels of the minors the year after he was drafted, and hit more homers in 50 less plate appearances at Triple-A than he did at Double-A. So, super impressive skill set. Looks like he has the bat to ball skills. Hit 314 in Triple-A, struck out less than 15% of the time, walked almost 15% of the time. So, power, speed, plate skills, like this looks as good as he can get. The only thing that I think would potentially prevent this from happening is if like the Cardinals like don't want to call him up. I know they're like in like full sell mode, but I don't know, man. It looks like they have a star in the making here in J.J. Weatherholt. So I think that his ADP will only rise, as it looks like he could and should earn a job with the Cardinals out of spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think they just try to work him in position-wise, or do you think Mason Wynn makes – I mean, Wynn – people like him for the defense and everything, but
yeah,
he's been,
I think,
below
they
average.
Him at second, right? Like, is that too much to ask? Or even maybe third potentially?
Yeah, I think.
Let's see where
when
he
you're
played.
At. Yeah, I mean they moved Donovan around.
Yeah, he played second base a bunch.
So that would be the path then. Yeah,
in 2025.
Yeah, because I think that elsewhere. I mean, you got to chalk up that Newt Barr.
I mean, Donovan's
probably
going to get traded, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. True. I was trying to see
and Arenado as well, right? So there's two spots.
Yeah, him. Especially if they're just selling the house. Yeah. But yeah, I like it. Should be
like play these young guys that they have, you know, yeah. Scott, Pages, Wynn, Herrera. Like there's some. I mean, I know the
yeah, dude,
Cardinal fan. Like you know, there's some interesting pieces there.
Oh, we need you to say it because the vibes are low here.
Yeah.
I know people who have literally gone to opening game for like 25 years that are like, oh, I didn't go to Bush once last year. I'm protesting. But now it's time to turn the page here with new leadership, all that stuff. But Weatherholt, you're right. It's like he's kind of the prototype, not just being a Cardinal fan, but like he's the type of guy I love in terms of the walk rates as much as the strikeout rate. He has a good hit tool. The speed is a plus as well. So yeah, when you look at last year and see, you know, he would have prorated out to like a 25-30 type of season with a 300 batting average. Like there's no reason not to give guys like this a look. And you just never know with the little guys, like small build guys like this. Sometimes they can actually find pop in the majors just with the velo and everything. So, yeah, I'm interested in the same way I was kind of interested in who was it? Mydroth on the White Sox. Like, mm-hmm. I'm always willing to bet on these guys. So I like it. And I think 318.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has more. I mean, he was drafted, what, ninth overall? He's their top prospect. He's on the top of prospect list. So.
The power is definitely more.
There's more of there's a prospect pedigree. With Weatherholt that maybe some of those other guys.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. And at 318, I mean, if they find out that he's playing, this goes way up.
Another cheat code sort of thing.
Yeah, it is. Still, I like it. Okay, so handful of names there. Steve, next episode is 200. It's going to be a Christmas special. We'll have to figure out what we're doing as a theme, but we'll bring it.
Special stuff. Yeah, crazy that we've gotten this far. And thanks everyone for coming along the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. We've gotten married and had a bunch of kids since the first episode. So what will the next 200 have for us? Maybe number one in our
hopefully some more fantasy championships.
Exactly. All right, well, thanks guys for tuning in. We'll be back in a couple weeks, but until then, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks guys. Later.